Do you know that 70% of women in the United States wear a size 14 or larger? Despite this, many top brands don't carry plus size options, and if they do, they charge premium prices. At More to Love, we believe everybody deserves affordable and fashionable clothing. That is why we carry new and gently used plus size clothing for a fraction of the original price. We are located at 606 New Leicester Highway behind Wynn's Diner beside the Sonnet.
This is Biz Radio host Joanna Patrice Haggerty. I am the founder of JPH Creative Biz and soon to launch Art Hero, a workforce development organization. My mission is to support and galvanize artists and creative entrepreneurs because art heals and connects. I believe that by activating creativity, we synthesize change. Come connect with me on Instagram at JPH Creative Biz. This is the Joanna Patrice Haggerty Show, where I invite the most innovative entrepreneurs, artists, and creative business owners to share their experiences, processes, practical tips, and inspirations. Today with me is Franklin Keel. Franklin is the associate principal cello with the Asheville Symphony Orchestra, founding cellist of the Opal String Quartet, and cellist, singer, songwriter with Sirius B, Upland Drive, and Samson and Delilah. He has appeared as a feature soloist with the Asheville Symphony Orchestra, the Hendersonville Symphony Orchestra, the Brevard Philharmonic Orchestra, and the Blue Ridge Orchestra. And he has shared the concert stage with Emmanuel Axe, Warren Haynes, Bright Eyes, Ben Soleil, Free Planet Radio, Stephanie's Id, the John Slickley Trio, Jane Kramer, Ben Fahn, and the Soul Symphony, as well as the Get Right Band. A passionate educator, Mr. Keel has taught orchestra for Henderson County Public Schools. He currently teaches string orchestra at Asheville Middle School and high schools, and he has taught clinics and classes for string students across Western North Carolina. I brought Franklin on to talk about his career as a creative, but first, thanks for being here today, Franklin.
Thanks for having me, Joanna.
Wow, I feel like, not going to lie, there is a lot of tongue twisters in orchestra and symphony. Reading that bio, I was like, okay, I can get this right.
Yeah, I think it's a much easier read than it is to say out loud.
Yeah, for sure. But it also is just really impressive. And that's one of the things that's so great. It's just starting off these episodes by being able to read these bios and some of these highlights. It's just so impressive. So usually what I do, Franklin, is I like to kind of wind the clock as far back as we can go and really dive into why creativity, why music? What are some of your first early memories of arts and creativity?
Oh man, that goes back to being a kid.
Good. Let's go there.
I remember taking violin lessons as a very young child. I started when I was 3. My teacher wouldn't teach anyone before they were 3 years old.
Wow.
But what my parents tell me is that I had a babysitter who played the violin. And when I saw her play, I sort of became hooked to the sound of it. And I do remember playing lots of violin records. Alongside like Michael Jackson and Def Leppard, and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you got to get some of the mix, right? The old and the new.
Right. But what I remember from the violin was that it was hard and not very. I think I liked listening to it, but once I found playing to be such a frustrating process, I wanted to quit. And my parents were like, no, you begged us for this, so you're gonna keep doing it. And then later on, once you sort of get used to it, if you still hate it, you can quit.
And that's pretty impressive that your parents were like, all right, you can choose what you want at 3, but you need to have a little bit of discipline.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Shout out to your parents for that one.
Yeah, they were able to see something that I couldn't see at that age, I guess.
That's amazing. So how long did that go on?
That went on for a decade. they let me switch to the cello, and I think it was kind of like I imagine that was what it was like when I saw the violin, was just that kind of wow factor. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, much did not change as in terms of like wanting to practice. So they were, so I was like, you know, I think cello will be a little bit more tolerable to practice than the violin. And it seems like a more fun instrument. And it was a more fun instrument. But I still didn't really practice all that much until I was about 14. Mm. And I discovered Antonio Vivaldi and started playing all the time. My parents helped me connect with a sheet music store and gave me a little bit of an allowance to buy some music. And I just started playing as much as I could. And a teacher helped me get into the Brevard Music Center. And it was there that I played Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony for the first time. And that was the first time I'd played a full-length symphony from beginning to end. Wow. And it was a crazy concert. This has never happened since. I don't think I've ever had this experience aside from this, where the audience was clapping for us before we had finished the piece.
Oh my gosh! Wow.
Tchaikovsky's good at that kind of thing. His finishes are really, really exciting. But this one really got everybody riled up. And I remember standing up with the orchestra and looking out at the audience, and just like that whole experience of playing that music. It was such an incredible experience that I was just like, yeah, I could get used to this. I decided I was going to pursue professionally from there. And I guess that's the rest of it.
What a common thread. I love that there's usually this kind of light bulb moment. And I also really love that you were really authentic about the fact that the practicing aspect was not really exciting and enjoyable, right? The fundamentals of learning are not always fun. You know, I was talking to Matt before we jumped on the show this today and really was talking about how learning is exhausting, right? And it's overwhelming. And especially as a teenager or a young kid, that's not always the fun part, but being able to be a part of the live performance was what really spurred that. So did that experience change the way you look at practicing at all?
Not for a long time.
That's fair. Still a teenager at that point.
when I started having fun playing, I did not practice. I just played. Mm. And I, you know, had a lot of bad habits, and I had a teacher that was working with me on trying to fix them, but I didn't really have a sense of what it meant to practice. Mm. And that was something that I had to learn at and after college.
I love that. So let's talk a little bit about college and what that experience was like. Where did you go again?
I went to the Eastman School of Music for my undergraduate degree. And okay. I was a performance major there. And then I went to Appalachian State for a teaching certificate when I decided I wanted to do more classroom teaching.
Wow. So what was that experience learning what practicing looks like? I feel like that's just such an important conversation to unpack and talk about, because it sounds like that learning how to perform your instrument correctly, play it right, and be able to do that has been a huge part of your journey.
I think that a lot of it, a lot of the frustrations, I think, had to do with a lot of unlearning. I had to like unlearn all of my habits, all the ways that I was sort of getting in my own way playing wise. I had to unlearn what it meant to practice. Like when I was a teenager, I'd sit down and I'd had a stack of music and I would just put something on the stand and play it and try to play it better. And then I'd move on to something else and move on to something else. And I thought I was practicing. To sort of unlearn what it meant to practice so that I could have a deeper, sort of clearer understanding of that process.
So, I mean, I'm kind of going deep with it. So we can pivot at any point, let me know, but do you have an understanding? I mean, obviously as a teacher, can you break down some of the high level concepts or fundamentals of what it means to practice as a musician? What did you have to go back and then learn correctly after you unlearned?
So yes and no. I think that as someone who, as a kid, just wanted to just play, and then as adult,
had to go back and sort of relearn everything. Mm-hmm. It did give me a more practical approach to technique. And it's a frustration that I've run into a couple of times when I've been able to get lessons with really talented soloists who mm-hmm. have been really good at their instruments all their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, a common thread in those lessons have been like, stop overthinking it and just do it. And in a performance, that's really good advice, because, you know, once you're on stage and you're presenting your music, the work is pretty much done.
Right.
You know, you can't practice in front of an audience most of the time. So that was something that I really carried with me from that. But the process of trying to figure out how to play these things, sometimes just doing it doesn't really cut it. Like I had been trying to do since I was a kid, and it worked for them, but it did not work for me.
Well, and I would imagine that this has deeply impacted how you do teach kids who are trying to learn how to play music. Yeah.
Yes. And it also impacts how I play and how I practice. And a big part of it is, you know, trying to communicate to kids sort of this is the process that I use to learn how to hold my bow. And mm-hmm. I do that every day when I sit down. Like, I just rethink about my bow hold, and I do the same thing with the way I hold the instrument. And it's sort of one of those things, because I had so many bad habits as a kid, training new habits is just sort of an ongoing process mm-hmm. that hasn't really stopped.
And being able to be learned from experience, you know, the work that I do with Art Hero is certainly informed by Expand. And I know we've had some touch points on that previous experience. That wasn't my most successful thing. And learning what I did wrong in those moments, learning how to be more successful in the future, that is part of what a good teacher does, is learns how to break down their failures, their experiences, and try and make that process easier. And being able to offer these students the reasons and the fundamental knowledge as to why learning this correctly or checking in with those fundamentals often is still so valuable for the beginner and the most experienced person. I find that to be so valuable. So tell me a little bit more about what it's like teaching students.
As a strings teacher, I have kids that come in at sixth grade, and then kids that are also in the high school orchestra as well. So they are with me for 7 years.
Wow.
And so across the board, that it's, you know, just like you were saying, there's like a lot of digging into the fundamentals and then expanding on that at just about every stage between, you know, their beginning processes and however far they get when they graduate. And so it's a great kind of way to sort of check in with all of these different elements. And we have to cover a lot, you know, the national standards and the state requirements are they have to learn their instrument. They have to learn a little bit about theory and history and improvisation and writing music. And so, you know, I have sort of a weekly structure where we do a little bit of bow hold on Monday and a little bit of left hand on Tuesday, and then scales and then theory and then creative time. And, you know, each grade has like a different level where they're sort of taking those beginning foundational blocks and then just sort of expanding on that. And we just sort of nurture each one of those areas as much as we can.
Well, I love that you made sure, I'm sure that it's not in the state curriculum to have the creative time, but I love that you make sure that that part gets included, because being able to kind of have that freedom in art is still really valuable.
Absolutely. So. That's the part that is the communicative part. If they, you know, that's where they, you know, like I often talk to them about how music is its own kind of language. It has its own semantics, it has structure and syntax and grammar.
Yeah. And
if we just play other composers' music, they're basically just reading stuff out loud for the rest of their lives. Mm-hmm. You know, so if they learn how to improv and write, they can learn how to communicate their own ideas, then they can participate a lot more in that dialogue.
And then there's room for disruption, whatever that looks like, right? You know, I know for you, a lot of the bands you play in are not necessarily traditional symphony or orchestra sounding music too. And that's really fun that you have the ability to play in a variety of different scenarios and settings. That's what makes you have a successful creative career.
Yes. And that's sort of what keeps me sort of, you know, happy as a musician too. You know, I think I made a decision a long time ago that I didn't want to be one of those career orchestra musicians that looked up one day and said, if I have to play Tchaikovsky's Fourth one more time, I'm going to lose it. You know, I just don't want to feel that way about a piece like that.
And honestly, you shouldn't have to, again, because you understand as a creative, we do get to create our careers. And one of the things I talk a lot about in this show is the different industries. So as a musician, there are so many different industries. There's live performance, there's festival world, there is studios, there is orchestras. So you don't have to get stuck in one track. And if you enjoy that, great, right? If you like the place where you know you're going and you're rehearsing every Tuesday and you're showing up every, you know, like you get to choose what kind of career that you want that to look like. So I love that even though you started music so early, you have kept this and you've done a lot of institutional work and schooling and teaching and all of that. You've kept this sense of freedom and almost a little bit of anarchy, I might even say.
And, you know, that it's a double-edged sword a little bit, too, because, you know what they say about a jack of all trades. Mm. And, you know, it means that I have to do a lot of management of my plate.
Yeah. You know, that I have reprioritizing, to, I imagine.
Yeah. Not, like, overloading myself and get overwhelmed. And, you know, it's really disappointing in moments when that happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one reason why this year I'm trying to sort of take some time and really focus in on the teaching work. And I have absolutely no plans to abandon performance. I need to always be sort of engaging in new kinds of music and just trying to look for ways to kind of manifest how that happens alongside this really big job.
Yeah. And again, I love the fact that you said some of these students you can have 5, 6, 7 years. Like that, I have worked in mental health, especially with the youth populations, and that is such a responsibility. And so I don't think there's anything wrong, like you said, with taking these moments to reprioritize. And one of the things that I know too, by having your study job at this moment and having this thing you're really deep into, it can almost new creative ideas. So I'm really excited to see whenever you are going to get on a stage after this, what's going to come out, because it's going to be fermenting a lot longer than it is when you're having to play 6, 7 shows in a week.
Right.
It's pretty exciting to know that there is still a lot of breadth of creativity for you to come. So you just said you just finished a show. Tell me about it.
So I played the Elgar Concerto with the Blue Ridge Orchestra at Diana Wortham. Mm. And man, this is a best piece. The first time I heard it was at the Brevard Music Center. I was a senior in high school, and somebody a year younger than me came onto the stage and played it. And my jaw was literally on the floor. Not just because it was somebody my age playing something like this, you know, with the technical prowess and the emotional depth, but the piece itself was just unbelievable. I'd never heard anything like it. And it's been one of those dragons I've been chasing around. I studied it in college. Jacqueline Dupre made an iconic recording with Daniel Barenboim as the conductor. There's a young cellist, I think his name is Sheku, who made some rounds in YouTube and eventually played for President Obama. And after that, he performed this and I think recorded this piece with Simon Rattle and the London Symphony.
Wow.
It's a staple in the cello repertoire, and it's something that I've been hoping that I would get a chance to play. And so this is just an amazing, it's an amazing experience.
And I love how much that these pieces of music that have so much history and so much new life, and old energy just pouring through it, that you get to have your own moment. Like, again, that sounded like it was almost like a bucket list thing for you to achieve, and how beautiful for us as creatives to always have some of that stuff. You know, for me, one of those is when I get to do my TED talk, right? That's just kind of one of those things. Yeah. I grew up with that concept of you're creating your own life. And TED was kind of, those talks were kind of new and really exciting when I was first getting into my career. And even though nowadays there's so many other ways to get my voice out there, that is still one of those, I got to check that off. So I love that you've been able to achieve that. And I really, really love that most of the conversation we had today really centered around the idea of kind of getting back to the basics and the fundamentals and unlearning what you've learned wrong and right. having to go back to the start with it all. Franklin, that was just such a pleasure. I hate that our show is not longer, but with the time that we do have left, I would be thrilled if you would let people know how they can stay involved with you, and when you are going to be performing, how they can come check out your work.
Well,
how many websites can we send them to right now? Right.
most of my activity in terms of communicating about performances is via Facebook. But Sirius B has a website. It is SiriusBmusic.com. And I will be, you know, I can be reached through Asheville High School and Asheville Middle School's website if anybody's interested in finding out what our orchestra is doing. And of course, you can see me at the Asheville Symphony. And so check in with the Asheville Symphony's performance calendar, because so far, I think we're still planning on a season beginning in November of Masterworks concerts.
Good. Well, and we all know that the world is changing on a dime, and we're here for the process. And we're so thankful for musicians and artists and creatives who are riding that wave alongside of us. So we'll give it grace, but we certainly hope that that's able to go through, right?
Yeah.
Well, again, Franklin, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks so much for having me on. This was a real pleasure.
Yeah, it really was. And as always, this is the Joanna Patrice Haggerty Show, where we share tips and tools of our community's most innovative entrepreneurs, artists, and creative business owners. Thank you so much for tuning in, and please connect by visiting bizradioasheville.com or on Instagram at jphcreativebiz. I would love to hear your show suggestions or any questions that you may have. And as always, stay creative.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast, and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.